The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions nights and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. As high school comes to an end in 2006 in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, a group of teenagers decide to go on a camping trip to celebrate their newly found freedom before they all take off for college. But on May 14th, 2006, the very next morning, which just so happened to be Mother's Day, Jarrett Clark never returned home. His family would never see him again, and this is the story of their fight for justice. They just wanted answers. What happened to Jarrett Clark on the night of May 13th, 2006? You know the old saying, what goes around comes around, basically just conveying the idea that good deeds will be rewarded and bad deeds will be punished. It's basically karma, which originated through Buddhism and Hinduism. And the word karma actually means action or effect. The idea that is that a person's actions will determine what happens to them in the future. Cue Taylor Swift. If I had the money, I would sing it for you right now, but I can't. If someone did something awful to you and you look at what goes around comes around as somebody getting what's coming to them, then whatever that person did to you is eventually going to catch up to them. And that is exactly what happens in the case of Jarrett Clark.
It
18-year-old Jarrett Clark was just finishing high school, graduating, and he was known in high school to be a very popular student. He had many friends. He was really athletic, and in an episode of Murdered by Morning, Jarrett's father, Eric, actually says that there was a time when Jarrett was going to be joining the wrestling team, and he was like, "I'm going to be huge. I'm going to be so buff, Dad." And Jarrett was really dedicated to his fitness, to his grades. He had plans after graduation to join the military. So Jarrett and his closest friends were stoked to be graduating high school. They wanted to just celebrate. They were going to party it up that night. And one of Jarrett's friends actually had a house party. And at this house party, there was another group of students who weren't really that close to Jarrett and his friends. And they were never really the type to hang out together. This group of teenagers asked Jarrett to come along. They were all going to go down to Wahoo Bay, which was a camping area in town, and they were going to spend the night. This group of teenagers was Brandon Hargrove and his girlfriend Courtney Manzer. Then they also were with Anthony Wallen, and then Brandon's older sister Dana Hargrove and Wayne Humphrey. So that whole group was going to be going. Jarrett was excited to go. He asked his best friend to come along, and his friend was like, "No, dude, like, we're having a party. I'm chill here. You don't even really know them. Like, just stay here." But Jarrett wanted to go. And there is a little rumor that it probably was because Courtney, who was Brandon's girlfriend, was flirting a little bit with Jarrett. And Courtney was a little stunner. She was a looker. Jarrett went off into the woods on a camping trip. The next morning, Jarrett was supposed to meet his family because it was Mother's Day. And the family was getting pretty worried because Jarrett never showed up the next day. And now day is turning into night. This is Mother's Day. Jarrett loved his mother. They were like best friends. He's not going to miss a day to celebrate her. So the family's just going crazy in their minds. They're contacting Jarrett's friends and they're learning a little bit about what could have happened. They do learn that Jarrett did go camping with a bunch of kids that the family did not know. They even spoke to Jarrett's ex-girlfriend, and she said that she heard a rumor that Jarrett had gotten into a fight in the middle of those campgrounds. They keep calling Jarrett's phone over and over, and it is just going straight to voicemail. Jarrett's mother and father, Tammy Slater and Eric Slater, they now go to Wahoo Bay, and they are just going to search. On Monday morning, the day after Mother's Day, a park ranger and Jarrett's father discover one of Jarrett's missing shoes. At this point, they are going to close Wahoo Bay and they are going to deem it a crime scene. Jarrett's family and friends were just celebrating his high school graduation, and then out of nowhere, he's just vanished. Several people join this search. Family, friends, neighbors, the whole community is getting behind the search for Jarrett. The sheriffs are going to now interview the group of teenagers that Jarrett was with. The Waggoner County Sheriff's Department is now going to interview those teenagers that were there that night. That would be Dana Hargrove, Brandon Hargrove, Courtney Manzer, Tony Wallen, and Wayne Humphrey. And they are all going to say the same thing to the detectives. They would all say that around midnight, a shoving match went on between Brandon, Tony, and Jarrett. And the whole group of teenagers would say that Jarrett was really drunk. They would also say that there was one point in the night where Courtney went into a tent because she had been drinking a little bit too much, and Jarrett followed her into the tent. And Brandon was pissed because Brandon was dating Courtney. So Brandon loses his mind on Jarrett, and that's why the little shoving match that they said happened. These teenagers are just going to claim that, yes, the shoving match happened, Jarrett was wasted, and he just walked off on his own, and we never saw him again. So we don't know where he is. That is the last that we have seen of Jarrett. When police first conducted all of these interviews, they just kind of assumed that Jarrett just walked off and there was no foul play here. They just thought it was a group of teenagers getting in a fight, and that was it. It is when the police find that they tracked Jarrett's cell phone to a dumpster in Broken Arrow. So now they're starting to think, wait a minute. If he did just walk off and we just can't find him, maybe he's unconscious somewhere, maybe he's in the water, why is his cell phone all the way back in Broken Arrow? But on May 19th, 2006, Jarrett's body would be found floating in the lake that was just a few hundred yards from where the teenagers were camping that night. Jarrett's autopsy would be done at the Oklahoma Medical Examiner's office in Tulsa. The autopsy would reveal trauma on Jarrett's body, but the medical examiner was going to say that they couldn't conclusively say what this trauma was from. It could have been from the beating that the teenagers described to the officers, or it could have just been because Jarrett was in the water for several days at that point. The autopsy also revealed that Jarrett's lungs were filled with water. And what that means is that Jarrett was alive when he entered that lake. And the autopsy would reveal that Jarrett died of drowning. Jarrett's case would be left with a lack of evidence and no leads. So Jarrett's case went cold for the next 6 years. But in 2012, there was a new sheriff in town, and his name was Bob Culbert. Bob Culbert was going to reopen Jarrett's case because he said there were lots of unanswered questions, and hell no, this case is not going to remain cold. He walked straight into the office of now retired investigator, Deputy Sheriff Danny Elliott of the Waggoner County Sheriff's Office, and he asked Sheriff Danny Elliott to reopen this case and investigate. He wanted to help because he was a dad now, and he couldn't imagine how that family was feeling, knowing that for the last 6 years, the people that knew exactly what happened to their son that night were just roaming the streets free. So Deputy Sheriff Danny Elliott kicks it into high gear. I mean, when I am about to tell you that this guy killed it, this guy worked his ass off to solve this crime, it is a truly inspiring case. First thing these sheriffs are going to do is they're going to reach out to Jarrett's parents and they're going to tell them, we're not giving up on you. We're not giving up on your son. Let's do this. The detectives look first at the toxicology report. They look back on it and they see that Jarrett barely had any alcohol at all in his system. He had a tiny amount of Xanax, and they do speak to his ex-girlfriend. They re-interview her and they ask her about the Xanax, and she said sometimes they would take some Xanax to calm down, to feel chill. So the total opposite of what the group of teenagers was describing, saying that Jarrett was wasted back in 2006. Toxicology report says no. They are now going to re-interview every one of those teenagers that was present that day. They are going to re-interview Lindsay Allen, who was Jarrett's ex-girlfriend. She would say that the night that Jarrett went missing, that she kept receiving texts from Jarrett's phone, but she was like, these texts don't sound anything like Jarrett. Like, are you okay? What is going on? She says they were just out of place, out of character. They're now going to ask Courtney Manzer to come back in, and this was the young lady who was dating Brandon, the one that was supposedly, allegedly flirting with Jarrett that night. She comes in and she is re-interviewed. Now, she's going to tell the officer that she doesn't remember anything. She's going to say she was too drunk. She's sticking to her story. She remembers being in the tent, and then she remembers a fight starting, but she doesn't remember anything after that. That's all she's going to say. They're going to now bring in Dana Hargrove, who is Brandon Hargrove's sister. She's going to say that she did drive her car the night of the fight, the night that they were all camping and the boys ganged up on Jarrett. She tells officers that she got into her own vehicle and drove around in the woods trying to find Jarrett because she was worried about him because he walked off and he was wasted. That's going to be something that changed from the first round of interviews back in 2006. Dana never said anything about driving her car around and trying to find Jarrett, but now she's saying that Jarrett ran off and they all chased him. They all went out looking for him because they were worried. Now they're going to interview Tony Wallen, and he's going to say that he was upset because he thought Jarrett stole his weed. So that's why they all got into a fight. So now there's conflicting stories. And Detective Danny is going to now say, you know what? None of these kids are trustworthy. None of these stories make sense. And I know that this is a cover-up. So next up for interviews is Wayne Humphrey. He's now 21 years old. Oh, and guess what? He's in jail. He's serving time for burglary and embezzlement. So he's easy for them to track down. They go and they get Wayne Humphrey out of jail and they tell him, you're going to come with us to Wahoo Bay and you are going to tell us what happened. Wayne goes to Wahoo Bay with the detectives, and there is actual video of this. If you watch the TV show Murdered by Morning, you can see the video of Wayne in his little jumpsuit and his handcuffs walking around Wahoo Bay telling the officers exactly what happened. And here is what he tells them. Wayne says, yes, there was a fight between Jarrett, Brandon, and Tony, and he says it was brutal. He says, in his own words, Tony grabbed him and they started boxing or something. And then they started wrestling and they fell. Jarrett and Tony, and Jarrett is winning. Wayne hit Jarrett in the head, and then they had Wayne hold Jarrett, and Tony Wallen hit Jarrett and kicked him in the head. Wayne says he hit him right in his face. He hit him between 1 and 3 times. And when he did this, he did it with such force that I let go of Jarrett. He says that once he let go of Jarrett, Jarrett fell, but then he jumped up and then he ran off. But why was Jarrett in the lake then? How did Jarrett wind up in that lake? Police are now going to get a little tip from a website called Justice for Jarrett. I believe this website was on Facebook, and someone in that site mentioned they were in the campgrounds that night that Jarrett got into that altercation. This woman says that her and her husband were willing to talk, but her statements were going to remain anonymous. This witness's statements are going to prove that this was a murder case. And this is what she came forward to say. She says that she heard a bunch of teenagers arguing and yelling, but she wasn't even as angered by the arguing as she was by the fact that there was this truck parked near her camping spot. Her husband had set a tent up closer to the boat docks. So in the middle of the night, there is this truck and it is just driving backwards towards the water to the boat ramp. She could hear the tires go into the water and she heard the truck kind of crash into something. Then she says that she heard a thud and then she heard a big splash. Was that splash Jarrett being dumped into the lake? Detective Danny would say that there is no confession. There is no physical truth, but he says, and this is really interesting the way he approached this case, he says that suspects will give you a little bit of truth every time you interrogate them. Because during an interrogation, if they're going to be lying to your face, they always add a little bit of truth in. Detective Danny says the best tactic that a suspect uses is that they'll give you a little bit of truth to mask the bigger lie. So instead of trying to prove that the suspects were lying, Detective Danny was going to try and prove that they were telling the truth. So what does Detective Danny know to be true? He knows that Jarrett's body was found in the lake. They know that Jarrett's shoe was found in the woods. So when his body was found, it was found with one shoe off and one shoe on, but he had both socks on. So in Detective Danny's mind, he thinks if he had one sock on and they say he ran through the woods and that's the last time they saw him, then that sock should be pretty messed up. Because these woods at this time, it would have been like a bunch of brush. It would have been mud. It would have been dirty. His sock would look like he ran through the woods. So they go and they pull all of the evidence from 2006 and they find the sock. They say that the bottom of this sock was pristine, but the top of the sock was completely shredded. The top of Jarrett's shoe was all scuffed up, and the pants that he was wearing had rips and they had vegetation still stuck into the pants. So at this point, police are going to bring in a botanical expert to look at the seeds and the thorns that were found embedded into the tops of Jarrett's socks. And this part is amazing. They actually employ a crime scene investigator to do a reenactment of Jarrett being dragged through the bush. One shoe on, one shoe off. They got a guy that was the same height and weight, the same build as Jarrett. They got him into the woods and they placed him down on the ground as if his body was limp, he was unconscious, and they were going to drag him by his arms to the lake. They have video of the police reenacting this entire thing in the episode of Murdered by Morning. I highly suggest you check it out. You can find it on Peacock at this point. This dragging and proving that Jarrett was actually dragged to a location proves the suspects weren't telling the truth. That was one of their truths, is that Jarrett ran away and they never saw him again. But no, Jarrett didn't run away. You guys dragged Jarrett. Investigators still don't have enough concrete evidence to bring these teenagers, who are now in their 20s, to trial. But another witness is going to come forward, and this is going to be a high school student that was in the same school as Courtney. And this high school student asked Courtney one day if she killed Jarrett, and she nodded and said yes. That statement, plus the witness's statement at the campsite the night of the attack, and also the evidence of the dragging and the crime scene investigators, this is going to lead police to be able to arrest Courtney for first-degree murder. They would also get Dana Hargrove and charge her with conspiracy to cover up a crime. In 2014, Tony Wallen would now be arrested and charged with the first-degree murder of Jarrett Clark. Wayne Humphrey would not be charged. And I bet you're all wondering, where's Brandon Hargrove? Brandon Hargrove seemed to be the instigator in this entire fight. Brandon Hargrove passed away 2 years after the murder of Jarrett Clark. Brandon was driving his truck along a bridge. He was speeding. His truck went over the bridge, fell into a little lake or river. It was 9 inches of water, and Brandon died by drowning. The same way that Jarrett Clark died. Dana and Courtney are going to agree to testify against Tony Wallen. The truth about what happened to Jarrett Clark on the night of May 13th, 2006 would go as follows. There was a party at Steven's apartment, and Jarrett decided he would leave with the gang to go camping at Wahoo Bay. Before they left, people at the party did say that Courtney and Jarrett were flirting, and yes, Courtney says they were flirting. At around 11:45 p.m., an argument breaks out over Courtney. Brandon and Jarrett are now going to argue because Brandon believes that Jarrett is flirting with his girlfriend. They all start to bully Jarrett, and Jarrett tries to leave, but the three guys chased him down. At around 12:30 a.m., Brandon, Tony, and Wayne were all chasing Jarrett, and they catch up to him. At that point, a fight breaks out. Brandon and Tony beat Jarrett, and then they panic and they try to cover their tracks. They dragged Brandon to Tony's truck, and that is when Dana was the lookout while Tony and Brandon had Jarrett in the back of the pickup truck. Courtney just stood by and watched it all. They hauled Jarrett to the lake and they threw him into the lake and they let him drown. Brandon then took Jarrett's phone, and that's when he was texting Jarrett's ex-girlfriend to cover his tracks. Then they all drove back into town and they threw his phone into a dumpster. Jarrett's family would agree to a plea deal, and with this agreement, Tony Wallen would plead guilty to second-degree murder. The plea deal sentence was only 8 years in prison and 12 years of parole. Jarrett's mother would say, "We wanted that little slice of justice for Jarrett." And even though Tony Wallen is now out of prison and has served his sentence, she says that she hopes that he had some miserable, miserable moments during his time in prison. Dana Hargrove pleaded guilty to obstruction, and she was given a 2-year probated sentence. Courtney Manzer pleaded guilty to conspiracy to be an accessory after the fact of murder, and Courtney was given a 2-year sentence. Jarrett's mother, Tammy Slater, tells a story about how one day she was cleaning the house, and she was really busy and a little frantic trying to get everything done, and Jarrett came running into the house, and he said, "Mom, you gotta stop what you're doing. You have to come outside with me. It's pouring rain. There's a thunderstorm. I just want you to smell the rain." And she was like, "Jarrett, what are you talking about?" And he was like, "Come on, Mom. You gotta stop. You gotta stop and smell the rain." And she said that she went outside with her son. Every time I cry. And she stood on the front doorstep with him and she smelled the rain. And she said, "You know what? Jarrett was right. We all have to stop and smell the rain sometimes." Oh my goodness, that one gets me every single time. I'm telling you, I even tried to tell my friend Trish that story, just trying to explain to her the story I'm doing this week, and I was crying then. Every time I talk about Jarrett's mom, I just get choked up. In the rain. Okay, so last week I said that I would share a 5-star review on the episode, and I got a 5-star review from Christina, and I just wanted to share it with you. Christina wrote, "This podcast keeps you hooked. Great storyteller and the perfect cadence to hold your attention." Oh my God, I love you, Christina. Thank you so much. You have some stickers coming your way. Thank you so much for listening every single week. It means the world to me. If you are enjoying Residue, it would be super awesome if you could share it with your friends and let other people know about Residue, and that would really help the show out. It would help me out. You all rule. And until next time, stay safe and stay paranoid.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.